Is anyone with us this afternoon that was not here this morning? So I should do a little review. Not so many. Well, early this morning there was an introduction to the topic of the advent of Nama Sankirtan. Going from the very beginning of this yuga, just some years after Krishna departed, when Namalvar of the Sri Sampradaya wrote some beautiful, or spoke some beautiful verses glorifying Nam Sankirtan, predicting in essence Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance, and then he appeared to give this Nam Sankirtan, congregational chanting, which we've been engaged in. During that session, we heard some discussion about chanting audibly as opposed to chanting silently, because mantra chanting is thought by some, at least in some cases, some mantras are to be chanted silently, but this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is to be chanted audibly, loud enough so the neighbors will close their windows when we have Mangalarti and things like that. No, we do it the other way around. We keep our windows closed during Mangalarti, but so we don't disturb them, but audibly, because we benefit and other forms of life that don't have a human form or a human tongue, we can vibrate and they can benefit. According to Prahlad Maharaj in Naradiya Purana, 100 times more beneficial. And our lives can be elevated to the stage of spiritual perfection through chanting. So then, we then heard some parts of the Shikshastakam number 1, the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, the GPS for reaching Goloka through the chanting of the holy name. Roadmap, how to get there, step by step. So we heard the first three steps are, we're using this term, excellences, where the beginning stage is Chaita Darpana Marjanam. I think, I don't see him here. Giridhari finally became peaceful, because he's been pondering this word Chaita and the heart and the mind. What does it mean? And what does it mean? And what does it mean? So we reach some happy conclusion. Consciousness, contaminated consciousness becomes cleansed. The heart becomes light and clear. The mind becomes free from the sins and reactions to sins just by the touch of the holy name. So we heard about that. And then bhava mahadavagni nirvapanam, the chanting, congregational chanting of the holy name has the power to put out a forest fire. The blazing forest fire of material existence. I mean, we heard something about that metaphor of the blazing forest fire of material existence. And the potency of the holy name is completely extinguish it and carry one beyond, putting that one out. The whole of material existence altogether can be eliminated. That means you're brought into a spiritual existence fully. And then it leads into the third one, Shreya. That's this one on the screen here. Shreya Kairava. Notice the hyphen is between the two. Kairava, literally it indicates a lily, but Prabhupada has translated as the white lotus of Shreya, good fortune, ultimate good fortune, in contrast with the temporary attraction of material prosperity and pleasures and comings and goings of the tidings of the world. Beyond that, into the Shreyas realm, Shreya Uttama, the white lotus of good fortune, that's devotional service, pure devotional service, becomes Vitaranam, becomes expanded. The petals of a lotus close at night, but in the presence of the night of Kali, in the presence of the Nam Sankirtan, it gives such light that the white lotus of good fortune expands. So the Sankirtan movement, this is Prabhupada's language, is the prime benediction for humanity at large because it spreads the rays of the benediction moon. And a little explanation, and we'll move on to the next four of the seven excellences. Chanting awakens Shreyas, pure devotion to Krishna, the soul's dormant propensity to serve the Lord with love. And further, chanting revives the loving devotion which qualifies one for the greatest good fortune, Krishna's association. This is where we ended. Krishna's association is the goal, not just remotely, but in proximity to Krishna through association with him in his abode, in his eternal dham, in our spiritual form, engaging in loving activities, this good fortune coming from Nam Sankirtan. Then, number four, excellence number four, we're using this term, excellence number four, vidya, vadhu, jivanam. Vidya, vadhu, jivanam. The life, literally it's the life of the wife of knowledge. It's interesting. I like this one a lot. So we're going to spend some time on this one. It's poetic and it's very powerful. And it's particularly for us who are sadhakas going through the stage of purification, anartha nivritti. Some of you are newer, you don't know what that means. There's nine stages of bhakti. And the first three quickly are some preliminary faith, association with devotees, and devotional activity. 1, 2, 3. Some preliminary faith, association of devotees, engaging in devotional activities with the devotees. So, welcome Bhakti Adam to association of activities with devotees. Then comes this anartha nivritti state, the next one. Anartha means something unwanted. Artha, something wanted. Anartha, something unwanted. Something unwanted within the heart. Those things in the heart that we don't, they're embarrassing. We wish they were not there. Some are easier to get rid of, some are a little more difficult, some are really difficult. But unwanted things, this indicates achieving the next stage. This excellence number four goes beyond the anartha nivritti stage. That's the first three. Sins and reactions to previous sins are gradually washed away. And as that happens, that mirror that becoming cleans, then there's real happiness, true happiness. Not the distorted kind or the temporary kind, but the eternal spiritual platform kind of happiness. One can experience that in the advanced stages of anartha nivritti, Shreya Kairava Chandrika Vitaranam. So now this number four is entering into the nishtha, steady, Nishtha means steady, bhakti. So this fourth excellence refers to chanting enriched with knowledge of the science of devotional service, where one's mind and intelligence become fixed, and one's practice becomes steady. Your practice can't be steady if your mind and intelligence aren't fixed. And your mind and intelligence can't be fixed unless there's some purification steadied by knowledge. So that's this vidya. Vidya helps to steady the mind and intelligence. And in this stage covered by excellence number four, once that, what was Jivanajivana was describing, the anartha nivritti is a big slope going up, and once you attain that steadiness, then it moves quickly. So from there, ruchi and asakti. Ruchi, taste, asakti, attachment. Attachment to Krishna, the object. Attachment to the activity, and then eventually attached to the object of the activity. Attachment, asakti. So we'll start with focus on knowledge. Please listen carefully, because the poetry is very beautiful, and if you don't listen carefully, it'll just sound like nice poetry and you'll be scratching your head. Poetically beautiful. There's a message, a very important, very wonderful message for us. So there's a reference here. This is Narada Muni, and that's King Prajinibari, at least it's the illustration from Bhagavatam, Canto 4, towards the end of Canto 4, where Narada Muni pays a visit to the palace of King Prajinibari. King Prajinibari, he wants me to speak into the microphone, so I didn't get any of it. And King Prajinibari, he's a nice king. He's a very pious king. And all of his previous lineage of kings, they were great devotees. And he has some devotional tendency, and he has some fruitive tendency. Strong fruitive tendency. Too much fruitive tendency. So he's a follower of the Vedas with too much fruitive tendency, so Narada pays him a visit. And Narada is really an excellent bhakti program leader. He really knows how to help people go the next step and the next step. So he doesn't, you know, he very gently and lovingly talks to King Prajinibari and tells him a story about once upon a time there was a king. He's talking about him, but he's talking about the king over there. And the whole, it's several chapters of story, and he dies and becomes a woman because he was attached to his queen and something, you know, anyway, so it's a whole story. Then he finishes all that, and the king goes, wow, could you tell me what all that was about? It was about you. And it was allegorical. And then he unpacks the allegory. And towards the end, he, in the verse, this is spoken by Shukadeva Goswami, saying, Narada said to the king, this particular message about education. Sa vidya tan materyaya. Sa vidya tan. Tan is a pronoun referring to the absolute truth or to Krishna. Tan matir, the mind upon Krishna. Real education is where the mind comes to Krishna. Real education is our education. This is Prabhupada's translation. Our education should be such that we can become elevated to Krishna consciousness. And in the commentary, Prabhupada writes, devotional service focused exclusively on increasing our attachment to Krishna is the goal of education, as well as the force that drives us forward. Jimuna Jivana asked a question, and he isn't here to hear the continuation of the answer to his question, but someone can share this with him. He wanted to know what keeps us going on the path of anartanavritti, of continuing to apply ourselves to keep the mind fixed on Krishna. It's having a clear understanding of what real education is, and real education is where the mind is, the mind, matir, tan matir, yaya. Here's the whole verse translated. 4:29-49. Now he chastises him, my dear king, because of your foolishly you've been too much attached to material fruitive activity. You do not know that devotional service is the only way to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Devotional service is the only way to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You cannot understand this fact. Your only activity should be those that can please the Personality of Godhead. Our education should be such that we can become elevated to Krishna consciousness. So I'm focusing on how are we to understand this vidya vadho jivanam. What is that knowledge that the holy name is the life of the wife of transcendental knowledge. So, bear with me. In Sanskrit, the Vedas are feminine. The Vedas are the mother and the spiritual master, the father. So the scripture, Shruti, or Vidya, or Shastra, all of those terms in Sanskrit, they're feminine. So transcendental knowledge is feminine, and knowledge of what is masculine? Knowledge of Tan, or Tat, or the Absolute Truth, or Krishna. The mother reveals who is the father. Scriptures are called revealed scriptures in our Christian terminology. Revealed scriptures. What do they reveal? They reveal God. Revelations about God. So the transcendental knowledge is the vadhu, the wife. There she is, the wife. And some translations read the young bride. So just to appreciate the poetry of Lord Chaitanya's Shikshastakam verse here. When a young bride is newly married, it may change after time, but when she's newly married, what are her thoughts absorbed in? Her young husband. So the young bride of transcendental knowledge, because the holy name, devotional service in general, holy name in particular, it awakens knowledge. There's a verse in the Bhagavatam we'll see in a moment. It, bhakti awakens, causelessly, bhakti gives rise to knowledge, vidya. So the knowledge, which is feminine, the young bride of knowledge, there's the object. What's the object? Her husband. What's the life of that transcendental knowledge? It's the holy name. The life of the wife of transcendental knowledge. The holy name, Nama Sankirtan, is, I hope you get it, it's the Jivanam, it's the Sankirtan, Nama Sankirtan is the life of the wife of transcendental knowledge. She's absorbed in the holy name. Young, budding, transcendental knowledge that awakens from devotional service has as its life, its energizing life force is the holy name. Beautiful. So she's not thinking of something else, the young bride. She's thinking, qualified young bride, she's thinking of her qualified new husband. And in a proper relationship, that affinity, the attraction, the attachment continues and continues and continues. Minus the imperfections of the material world on the spiritual plane, it continues and continues and continues to the stage of prema. Prema bhakti. Love for the personality of Godhead, love for the object or the life of the wife of transcendental knowledge. So the Vedas all point to Krishna. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Vedaishta Sayarvar Aham Eva Vedyo. The purpose of all the Vedas is to know him. And the essence of him is his name, because him and his name are not different. So whatever, it's really beautiful. The poetry is very beautiful. When we read, we're not exercising our gyan faculties. We're nourishing bhakti for bhaktas. When we read Prabhupada's purports and the Bhagavatam verses and Bhagavad Gita verses, it's transcendental knowledge that's nourishing our affinity for Krishna. And the demonstration of that affinity for Krishna has become, we become attracted to Krishna, and we become attracted to the holy name of Krishna, which enhances our attraction for Krishna. And we hear more and more about the attractiveness of Krishna, which enhances our attractiveness to the holy name of Krishna. That's a nice marriage between the transcendental knowledge, which is feminine, revealing the father, or the husband, or the object of that transcendental knowledge. And Sankirtan, Nama Sankirtan, is that life of the wife, young bride of transcendental knowledge. I like the poetry. It says a lot in three words. So here's a little amplification of the same message. This is a painting of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who, when he visited Jagannath Puri, he spent some time with Mr. Super Scholar named Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He was the most brilliant scholar, almost, on the whole planet at that time. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is pictured here, seated at the feet of this young 24-year-old sannyasi, beautiful in feature and so forth, trying to help protect his vows of sannyas by teaching him Vedanta Sutra. And after 7 days, on the eighth morning, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, "I don't know if you're understanding me. You haven't said anything. For 7 days I've been speaking, you haven't said anything. Do you understand Vedanta Sutra?" And Lord Chaitanya said, "I understand Vedanta Sutra very easily, but the more you speak, it more covers the meaning of Vedanta Sutra." Mr. Scooper Scholar was a little taken aback. And, well, if you understand Vedanta Sutra, then can you explain to me? In a very simple and direct and beautiful way, he described to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya the meaning of Vedanta Sutra and went, wow, that was great. I never heard such a simple, wonderful, beautiful, clear understanding of Vedanta Sutra. And then came the topic of the Atmarama verse. Could you describe the Atmarama verse? Lord Chaitanya said, you're Mr. Super Scholar. Why don't you teach me about Atmarama verse? So, sure, I'll teach him. And then similar exchange. Could you, now that I've explained, can you explain? And his explanation was so amazing that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya reached the conclusion, you're not a sannyasi, you're not a ordinary man at all. You're the personality of Godhead. And before that comes this verse, which we find in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Lord Chaitanya says, explaining the Atmarama verse, with the exception of devotional service, all the methods of self-realization are like the nipples on the neck of a goat. I have a picture of a goat. Next. And there's two little things hanging underneath the neck of most goats anyways that don't do anything. There's a name for them in English and a name for them in Latin, and Lord Chaitanya calls them nipples on the neck of a goat. Therefore, an intelligent person adopts only devotional service, giving up all other processes of self-realization. So there's Mr. Goat. And there are those two little protrusions hanging beneath his neck. So they're, I guess you could say, decorative. They don't have any function at all. They don't deliver milk. The female delivers milk in another place of her body, but not under her neck. So it doesn't do anything. So the other processes, other than bhakti, according to Mahaprabhu, although they're Vedic, they don't give self-realization. And now we're going to refer to, if you can remember from our midday class, an application of something that we heard earlier. I, by chance, came across this article, New York Times, June 26th, just 5 days ago, where there was a photojournalist who wanted to capture the inner light in photography of 108, nice number, right? 108 most outstanding yoga practitioners and teachers. And because they don't do just for exercise, but as a spiritual journey, that's kind of like the packaging of his photojournalism. So there's one of those photos. Now, let's just accept that this gentleman and the next one I'm going to show out of the 108, they're serious. They're not just become a yoga teacher to make a living and all that goes along with making a living as a yoga teacher, having female yoga students and having nice time with the female yoga students, which commonly is what goes on. Or a female yoga teacher that has her students and whatever it is. So it's not just the as it says here, the exercise regimen and the benefits, but there's a sincere spiritual interest. Now, I can't do that. Probably, I don't know anybody that can do that, even amongst yoga teachers. So he's an elevated yoga teacher, and when he's looking out into the lake or whatever he's looking at, what's his mind upon? Well, his mind's not on Krishna or a life of using his senses in service to Krishna, because bhakti has these two elements, what you do with the mind and what you do with the senses. The last verse of chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita speaks of those two elements. The topmost of the yoga ladder, according to Bhagavad Gita, is where the mind is totally absorbed in Krishna and one is engaged in activities, obviously with the senses, practical activity, in serving Krishna. So supposing you don't have that, but you're on a spiritual journey, where are you going to reach in that spiritual journey? At best, scratch the surface and you get impersonalism. I don't need to talk too much about it. I'll say two things. Sometime around this time, I don't know, around this time last year or maybe a little bit before that, I was giving an evening class and a whole group of yoga teachers came to the class. So I had to kind of scale the class down so that they could relate to the topic. And even in that simple way, you know, one of the students predictably said something to the effect of, in the end, it's all one. Because that's what you get when you don't have Krishna bhakti and you're on a spiritual journey. What do you get? Minus Krishna. That's what you get. And what's minus Krishna, the spiritual? Brahman. And depending on the vernacular, it's all one. And the final analysis, it's all one. Here's another little story. Just heard this recently. Prabhupada was in Bombay and he was being asked, Prabhupada, you often speak about Mayavadis. I don't know if I've met a Mayavadi. What, can you tell us what a Mayavadi is? Prabhupada's answer, Bombay, 1970s. Take any Hindu, scratch a little bit beneath the surface, and you have a Mayavadi. And those of you from India, I think you can understand. There's some sense of devotion to something or someone. But what's the end quest? To become one with Brahman. Commonly. Not always, but commonly. It's like that. Just beneath the surface. And just beneath the surface of any spiritual journey, when there isn't bhakti that becomes awakened by Nam Sankirtan, what do you get? So now I'm going to refer you back to something that we discussed this morning. This verse spoken by Shukadeva Goswami, if you remember that picture of Shukadeva Goswami standing, speaking to Maharaj Parikshit, kneeling with folded hands before him, 6249. Here's the whole verse. It has to do with the mind. Listen carefully to the mind part. One who desires freedom from material bondage should adopt the process of chanting and glorifying the name, fame, form, and pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, at whose feet all the holy places stand. One cannot derive the proper benefit from other methods, such as pious atonement, speculative knowledge, and meditation in mystic yoga, because even after following such methods, one takes to fruitive activities again, unable to control his mind, which is contaminated by the base qualities of nature, namely passion and ignorance. So I mentioned, and we covered that, anyone who before devotional service has done any of those things, or combination of those things, which some of us did, I did, that was a very clear realization. I couldn't articulate it so eloquently as Shukadeva Goswami has done. But after some benefit for some discipline, as soon as that activity of discipline, you move on to something else, like live your life. The mind goes back to fruitive activities because there's no shelter. Prabhupada's example in A Journey to Other Planets, one of his essays that he wrote even before he came to the West when space exploration was starting. So he wrote an essay and it became a publication, Easy Journey to Other Planets. You can send a spaceship up, 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 and it go beyond the pull of the atmosphere and can zoom around for some time. But after some time, it has to come back. It has to come back unless you take shelter. So some process that brings elevation, that's what's being said here. Some process that brings elevation, but there's no shelter. There's no service to Krishna in devotion to Krishna. You can't stay there. You have to come back. The mind will again. It's exactly what Devahuti says to Kardama Muni, or to Kapila Dev in Canto 3. Is it really possible? Is it really possible to become free from the influence of the material energy? Because after all, since the beginning of time, practically, we've been involved in matter. How many lifetimes can anybody say? How many lifetimes we've been involved in matter? We can't say, too many to count. And the implication in matter is so strong. So you may, by knowledge or any other practice, discipline, elevating activity, go up, 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 up. But the mind is still influenced by the modes of nature and past karmas. And again, we'll be engaged in fruitive activity. So that's not it's a very incomplete spiritual journey. That's the Bhagavatam's conclusion, and that's the message of this verse also. There's another one of the photojournalist images. And it looks really nice. I mean, when I saw it, I thought, gee, I'd like to find that spot and go sit and chant japa. But imagine putting in that man's hand a bead bag or a pair of cartels or Narada Muni's tambura or something and sing the names of Krishna. Because without that, where do you go? You go into a peaceful, serene situation and slow the mind down and become feeling inner tranquility and peace. And then what? Like, what does everything rest upon? If you don't have that shelter in Krishna, and shelter in Krishna means devotional service, this is not a deriding remark. It's an appreciation remark of the benediction of the holy name, and in part those that understand it to share it. In an appropriate manner, not a holier-than-thou manner, a pushy manner, a condescending manner, any of those other wrong spirits, but the right spirit of taking this gift, recognizing the gift, and offering the gift to others in an appropriate manner. That's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give, is this gift. So now I'm going to read a little exchange during a Bhagavatam class, Srila Prabhupada in Bombay, as you see, 1974, speaking on a verse from Kapila Dev, chapter 25 of Canto 3 is devotional service. He's explaining devotional service. And he's explaining this devotional service includes chanting of Krishna's name with japa, reading transcendental literature, including also Sankirtan, and any one of these forms awakens knowledge. Here's Prabhupada speaking. The simple thing is that you chant Hare Krishna. But if you think yourself as very learned, thoughtful man, and you want to understand through science and philosophy, all right, come on. We have got books. Learn it two ways. We have got 36 books for you. You cannot finish it even in your whole life. Come on. Otherwise, if you are not so learned to read all these books, chant Hare Krishna. Two things are there. Take advantage, any one of them, and be liberated. So this process of bhakti, just from bhakti itself, knowledge arises. Here's the verse I promised you we'd speak about. Again, this is Sutta Goswami over here speaking Srimad Bhagavatam to the sages over there of Naimisharanya, and one of the introductory verses, Canto 1, Chapter 2. By rendering devotional service unto the Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. Knowledge and detachment awaken through the touch of bhakti. Vidya vadhu jivanam. It is the life of the young bride of all transcendental knowledge, or just, it's the life of all transcendental knowledge. As a result of acquiring devotion, a result of acquiring devotion is that devotees become illuminated with spiritual knowledge. Further chanting matures that knowledge into realization, which in time reveals devotees' original position in one of the 5 relationships with Krishna. Just in 3 words, all that, huh? Vidya vadhu jivanam. Okay. That's excellence number 4. 3 to go. Now it's downhill. Anandam Bodhivardhana. Ananda means bliss. Sachit Ananda, eternity knowledge and bliss. Ambudhi means ocean. And Vardhanam is increasing. So the Nam Sankirtan increases the ocean of bliss. So this is another level beyond the nishta bhava and, excuse me, nishta, ruchi, and asakti comes the bhava stage, where the waves of spiritual emotion splash within the devotee's melted heart. Now in this bhava stage, it's preliminary to the prema stage, so the ecstasies of spiritual emotion have not fully matured yet. That's the prema stage, but it leads to the prema stage. In this bhava stage, the purification has already taken place, so spiritual development doesn't depend upon material, the externals. Contamination and material condition have been taken away. So bhava just spontaneously moves, abundantly manifesting in the metaphor flowers, which later turn into fruits or prema. So this is describing a very advanced stage of bhakti, anandam buddhivardhanam. Ambudhi literally means the ocean. So there's a photograph of the ocean. And imagine where there's an ocean of ananda instead of salt water. There is an ocean of ananda. And that feature of ananda, or bliss, is the feature of Srimati Radharani. Sachit ananda, the internal potency of Krishna has these 3, Sachit and ananda. And Radharani is that ananda portion. And Chinmaya rasa means the spiritual potency. That's Radharani. So the ocean of ananda increases because of merciful conduct of Srimati Radharani. That's the explanation of our acharyas. An ocean that increases, an ocean of ananda that increases, that's the holy name, Nam Sankirtan. But through the agency of Srimati Radharani, we can, advanced chanters can experience that. So now a little nice message about this distinction of Mahamaya and Yogamaya. So there's a photo, or painting rather, of Mahamaya. Mahamaya is the deluding potency, the potency of illusion. And you see at the bottom, there's the three modes of material nature, the presiding deities of the three modes of material nature. And she is the potency under their direction that places living entities under material illusion. But she, Maya Shakti, is an expansion of Yogamaya, and Radharani is the ananda portion of that Yogamaya. By the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, we're associating with the merciful Radharani, because this term Hare is the vocative of Hara. We call Hara and it becomes Hare. And that Hara, that's the internal potency, Radharani. And the Yogamaya feature, there's a photograph of, in Vrindavan, there's a place where Krishna performed rasa dance, one of them, called Vangshivat. And the presiding deity at Vangshivat is Yogamaya, pictured here. There's a close-up of Yogamaya. And Radharani is the ananda portion of Yogamaya. So now we'll go back. And here's a nice excerpt, commentary from Srimad Bhagavatam in relation to the pastime of Krishna going to the place where the gopis were observing Katyayani Vrata. It's a very elevated, lovely, esoteric pastime of in Krishna's childhood. This pastime took place before Krishna went back to the other side of the river Jamuna. So it means he was a little boy, and the girls were little girls. And with Krishna, were the little, even littler than Krishna boys, as little cowherd boyfriends. And during the coldest month, in January, the young girls would go to the Jamuna River before the sun would rise and take their bath in the Jamuna River in the cold morning before the sun would rise. And before that, they would worship Goddess Katyayani. Now, Goddess Katyayani is one of the meanings of Katyayani is Durga, Mahamaya, the external potency. But the gopis don't have any business worshiping the external potency. Therefore, they were worshiping the internal potency, which the external potency is a reflection of. So here's an explanation given in the Bhagavatam, and it's a discussion between two elevated personalities. Vidya and the Shrutis. What that means is these personifications of the Shruti mantras, the Shruti portion of the Vedas, and Vidya, they're having a talk about this topic. So here's the explanation that's given. Taken from Narada Pancharatra. I'll read it, but the essence I think you'll capture. The Lord's inferior potency, known as Durga, is dedicated to His loving service. Being the Lord's potency, this inferior energy is not different from Him. There is another, superior potency, whose form is on the same spiritual level of that of God Himself. Simply, by scientifically understanding this supreme potency, one can immediately achieve the supreme soul of all souls, who is the Lord of all lords. There is no other process to achieve him. That supreme potency of the Lord is known as Gokuleshwari, the goddess of Gokula, the internal potency. Radharani is Gokuleshwari. Her nature is to be completely absorbed in love of God. Oops. And through her one can easily obtain the primeval God, the Lord of all that be. The internal potency of the Lord has a covering potency known as Mahamaya, who rules the material world. In fact, she bewilders the entire universe, and thus everyone within the universe falsely identifies himself with the material body. So now, what does this have to do with chanting? Well, chanting brings us in contact with this internal potency, and through the agency of the internal potency, or Yogamaya, one can experience Ananda, because you're in direct contact with Ananda, Srimati Radharani, and in that manner experience Krishna in fullness also, at least the capacity of the jiva. Bhaktivinoda Thakur comments similarly, that person is a true preceptor, a true father, a true mother, and a true friend. Also, only if they teach one to always remember the holy name of Sri Hari alone is everything. This is from one of his Sharanagati songs. And Monday morning we're going to be singing where this comes from. It's Kevalastakam. The holy name of Sri Hari alone is everything. That's the refrain. Harir Nam Eva Kevalam. So here's the summary of this one. Anandam Bodhivardhanam, it increases the ocean of transcendental bliss as much as the heart is relieved from unwanted habits. That's the first three. To that degree, we become devoted to Krishna. Bhakti awakens. As much as devotion is firmly fixed in our hearts, to that degree, we acquire realized knowledge. And as much as the heart is illuminated by both devotion and knowledge, to that degree we taste spiritual happiness. In this way, the ocean of bliss swells. There's a lot in this one. That's just the first stanza of Shikshastakam. We're not even finished yet. We have to get to the prema stage. You ready? Let's go. Pratipadam purna amrita asvadanam. Pratipadam, at every step. Purna amrita, full nectar. Asvadanam, giving a taste. So amrita means nectar, and literally it means that by which one becomes deathless. So there's one kind of amrita that was produced by the churning of the milk ocean. It's otherwise known as somarasa. And there's Mohini Murti who's carrying the pot of amrita, and she's distributing to all the demigods. And the demons are over here wondering, hey, what about us? So that somarasa is one kind of amrita, but then there's Purna Amrita. And the Purna Amrita is not just the longevity of life in the heavenly planets. It's reinstating the soul in the soul's eternal position in Goloka. Purna. This is the fruit of prema. So Purna Amrita can be equaled to prema. It's saying something different, but it equals the same thing. Reinstating the soul in its eternal position in Goloka. So I've been using this image, Gopa Kumar returning to the spiritual world and rejoining his eternal pastimes and activities with Krishna. The same Purna Amrita is used in relation to the six Goswamis. They were engaged in their Goswami bodies, not in their Swarup, but externally while they were living in Vrindavan, Premamritam Ambodini. They were at every moment in this ocean of Prema Amrita. So externally engaged in their duties, internally absorbed in the highest stages of devotion. And Nama Sankirtan can deliver that at the higher stages of chanting. Here's a nice verse similarly expressing, spoken by the agents of Vaikuntha, the Vaikuntha Dutas, spoken to Gopu Kumar. Dearer to the Lord than even his own beautiful form, his easily worshipped holy name benefits the entire world. Indeed, nothing is as full of nectar or sa rasam as the holy name of the Lord. Now, we're not tasting that. At least most of us probably not tasting that. But the nectar is there, so the dullness of our tongue or the covered condition of consciousness needs to be cleansed and elevated and purified, and the inner cultivation of hankering for being in our relationship with Krishna needs to awaken, the bhakti feature of our life. Not just the activities of bhakti, but the desire to be in our relationship with Krishna aspect, the internal aspect, as mentioned the very first class this morning. When one becomes matured in Nam Sankirtan, this is what one can experience. Nothing is as full as nectar, full of nectar, as the holy name. Now, so this is the prema stage. In Rupa Goswami's description of the prema stage, is that the stage of prema derides even the conception of liberation. Here's what it says in Nectar of Devotion, Chapter 1, Nectar Devotion. Srila Rupa Goswami says that if Brahmananda, or the happiness of becoming one with the Supreme, is multiplied 1 trillion fold, it still cannot compare to an atomic fraction of the happiness derived from the ocean of devotional service. Another reference. In Hari Bhakti Sudodaya, Prahlad Maharaj says, "My dear Lord," praying to Nrisimhadeva, "I am feeling transcendental pleasure in your presence and have become merged in the ocean of happiness. I now consider the happiness of Brahmananda to be no more than the water in the impression left by a cow's hoof in the earth compared to this ocean of bliss." Ananda Ambodhi. And then there's this nice similar reference. Another book by Rupa Goswami is Padyavali. Padyavali is just a collection of verses from different sources. And he doesn't give a commentary, he just lists the verses. So here's verse 28 in that text. O Lord, is your impersonal spiritual effulgence not always present everywhere? Even so, it has not been able to break even a small single leaf from the tree of repeated birth and death. On the other hand, the moment your holy name is taken by the tongue, it thoroughly shatters the tree of birth and death down to its roots. Of these two, the spiritual effulgence or the holy name, which should be served? And this is the references Sridhar Swami, the commentator on the Bhagavatam. So let us take shelter of the holy name. One more reference from Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is Krishnadas Kaviraj writing, "Pure love for Krishna is eternally established in the hearts of the living entities. It is not something to be gained from another source. When the heart is purified by hearing and chanting, this love naturally awakens." So, at every step, pratipadam, if we perform nam sankirtan with love, we will seek Krishna either internally or externally at every step. We're almost done because the last excellence is very simple. So, summary. It enables us to fully taste the nectar, purna amrita, for which we are always anxious. So this is the perfectional stage of chanting. When devotees finally achieve the perfection of chanting, they taste the full nectar of loving devotion to Krishna, a nectar that makes the bliss of liberation seem insignificant. Then last sarva, atma snapanam. Snapanam means to take a bath. And atma snapanam is taking a spiritual bath. And sarva atma snapanam is, come on in. Everybody, take this spiritual bath. It gives a cooling effect to everyone. Chanting frees conditioned souls of the illusion of identifying themselves with their body and mind and establishes them in the cleansed and cooling reality that they are eternal spiritual entities. Then the conclusion, Param Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam. Let there be victory for the congregational chanting of the holy name of Krishna. Param Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam. This is a nice event. Just the gatherings of devotees in general is a nice experience. And specifically huddling around the fire of Sankirtan Yajna. We're going to have nice opportunity together for chanting Nama Yajna. So these messages, that's not just information or intellectual, oh, that was interesting and there's another interesting point. What it's meant to do is, as I've been trying to repeat, give us a very clear sense of direction, how to get from where we are to where we want to go in incremental steps. Where are we? What's next? How to focus? How to make that journey to the receive the fullness of the gift that Lord Chaitanya wanted to give Braja Prem, how to get there. And, you know, there's persons here that are at all different stages of devotional practice, some super beginning, some somewhere a little bit beyond that, and some practicing for many, many years. And the number of years is not, it's not a mechanical process, it's a devotional process. So the number of years is not the essence, the essence is the essence, and entering into this gift of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in a way that he's indicating, please take it this way, apply it this way, and you'll get the full benefit of chanting. The purpose of going through all of this is to receive the fullness of Lord Chaitanya's gift, to recognize what it is, and to go more deeply into the art of receiving it, applying it. So part of it is going to be the kirtan this evening, and then another part of the festival of the Holy Name is our 32 round day. Then, of course, when we're chanting japa tomorrow morning, similarly. So these two main, japa and congregational chanting, it's our life. It's our means of going further and further and further towards the goal of life, the purpose of life. Any comments or questions? All right. Everyone's satisfied. Or tired or something.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. Thank you. Maharaj, in one of the conversation you was telling, in the Srila Prabhupada mentioned that if you want knowledge, read the books. If you don't want knowledge, just chant.
The benefit of chanting is to get knowledge of Krishna. The benefit of reading is to get knowledge of Krishna. The two means to get to the same. That was his message. The benefit of chanting is to know Krishna. The benefit of the scripture is to know Krishna. Take either one or both, whatever you like. But come to know Krishna. The means of knowing Krishna is through devotion to Krishna. That clarify your question?
So we need both, like book.
Well, we have both. Some people like this more. Some people like that more. Some people like both. We have both. Take them both. Please take them both. Don't worry about it.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, so I guess we're just going to go into the kirtan, evening kirtan. Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki, Gaur Premanandi.